My film is called What is Democracy, which is, you know, a bit of a strange movie title, but I wanted to convey the philosophical approach and essence of the film. So there are a lot of social issue documentaries out there that are raising awareness about different problems. This film does that. It touches on a lot of the problems of our time, inequality, racism, the challenge of making change in a global complicated world. But the film approaches these challenges with a philosophical lens. So, you know, what is this word that we say all the time, democracy, the people rule? Where does it come from? You know, and can we ever really reach it?
Okay, that sounds like the kind of stuff that folks who are in a liberal arts college program would have dealt with, but probably never thought much about again. So time to reconnect with those roots.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you know, people do get to have a little bit of a philosophical experience in college if they go to college. And then you're right, it's sort of something that often, is not part of our daily life. And so part of the film, part of the experiment of the film was to actually approach everyone I interviewed as though they were a philosopher, to sort of reconnect to the people I met with that part of themselves. And, you know, for me, philosophy is just, you know, asking of fundamental questions, you know, what is justice? What is freedom? What do we mean when we talk about equality? What do we want our society to be like? And so I think, the film, it sounds heady, but it's actually quite, you know, I did my best to make it entertaining and engaging and to sort of get the audience involved in thinking. I see the film as an invitation to think, and I think it's very important for us to ponder these big questions at this perilous moment.
Do you have a philosophy background?
I have a very checkered academic background, actually. So I have a master's degree from the New School for Social Research, which is quite a well-known university in Manhattan, but well-known because it was a kind of university in exile for European intellectuals after World War II. And so has this sort of spirit of, sort of critical intellectual activist engagement. But I never formally studied philosophy, and I also never formally studied film. So I have... I was actually had quite an unusual educational background as a kid. I didn't go to school, but I wasn't homeschooled. I was just allowed to sort of follow my interests and do what I wanted to do. And so for me, film and writing are both mediums through which I continue that exploration. And I have sort of used them as excuses to go out into the world and keep learning.
And what inspired you to do a film about democracy?
So I was very involved in the movements of 2011. So if we think back to 2011, which feels quite far away by now, but it was the year of the Arab Spring, of the Wisconsin occupation, of Occupy Wall Street, of the movement of the squares in Europe, all sorts of social movement energy that kind of almost seemed to come out of nowhere. But of course, it was actually the backdrop to it was the sort of global financial crisis and the economic downturn we have yet to totally recover from. But so all over the world, people were saying, you know, we want real democracy, something's broken. And people were saying this in very different contexts, you know, Turkey and Bahrain, but also Spain and, of course, the United States. And so this word democracy was really in the air, and movements were alive. And so that was when I really started thinking about this word. You know, what do we mean when we go down the street and chant, this is what democracy looks like? And, you know, why is this principle so hard to put into practice? I was also writing a book called The People's Platform, Taking Back Power and Culture in the Digital Age, that is a sort of political economy of the internet. I was looking at the way new media is changing our communications, at what are the business incentives driving those changes. So I was looking at all of these claims from Silicon Valley to be creating sort of more democratic media or to be democratizing media. And so I was like, well, hold on, you know, what would a democratic internet look like? Would it really look like a handful of corporations owning everything and commodifying all of our comments and all of our personal data? I don't think so. So this word democracy was something I was dealing with from multiple angles. And I just thought, what the hell, I'll just totally dig into it. And I think it lends itself to a documentary film format, because it invites a polyphony of voices, and documentary is a beautiful medium to spend time with people, you can get to know people really fast and sort of intensely. So there's a lot of characters in the film. And then as I was making the film, I actually wrote a book that comes out May 7th. And the book is called Democracy May Not Exist, But We'll Miss It When It's Gone. And the book is much more, you know, it's of course, my voice as opposed to the voice of the subjects in the film. So I deal with all the sort of analytical problems and look more at history. And so the book is a more in-depth exploration of the same themes.
We're speaking with Astra Taylor, the filmmaker, author, and musician, on the phone from New York City. Looking forward to seeing you at the Sanctuary for Independent Media on Wednesday afternoon and evening. You mentioned the Occupy movement and the social protests around the world in 2010. I'm old enough to remember the WTO protest era of the, 2000s. And then before that, of course, the 60s. In each case, it seems like there's this huge outpouring of popular resistance that is gaining traction, and then it's suddenly crushed, either by cultural forces or by a police state. How does that relate? I don't know if you agree with that. And in any case, how does that relate to your film about democracy and your work on activism?
Yeah, I mean, movements do come in these waves, right? They come in these waves and they sort of crest and they seem to dissipate. And you're right that sometimes there's sort of internal reasons they do that. You know, maybe a movement doesn't know what the strategy is, or it doesn't have the internal coherence or the institutions to keep it going. Or there's pushback from without, whether that's the police state or it's economic opponents that are really well organized. So the film tries to actually be very honest about this. And I look at the example of Greece. So Greece had a very powerful Occupy movement in 2011 before Occupy Wall Street in May. And it was over a government bailout that was going to lead to extreme austerity measures, so the slashing of welfare, of education, of labor standards, et cetera. So what people did there was they occupied, but they also built a political party. There was one that was, you know, it was called Syriza. It was quite small, but they joined it en masse and gained a lot of momentum, and they actually won. The prime minister of the country is now is a member of the Syriza party. And what the film shows is that even they did everything right. You know, they organized, they went on strike, they occupied, they built a political party, they took political power. And nonetheless, they weren't able to fight back against austerity because of the power of international finance. Because one country is not an island. It's in this very complicated world. And the international system basically said, no, you know, you're not going to be able to invest in your state, your welfare state. You're actually going to have to prioritize paying back these debts, even if that means people lose their health care, lose their jobs, lose their lives even. So, you know, the film is honest about the enormous forces we're up against. I mean, you don't just have a protest and then you win and you get to go home. At the same time, I think the film has a very long time horizon, 2,500 years. And so, you know, progress is made. It is made, but it's won through struggle. And that is the message. And, you know, and so there are these massive waves, and then there's pushback, and then we have to keep going against the odds. I mean, it's thinking back to Occupy, today's an interesting day. Elizabeth Warren just announced her educational policy that would eliminate student debt, basically cancel student debt for 75% of student debtors and have free college. And this, you know, I was part of the group in 2011 that was saying this very loudly from Zuccotti Park and elsewhere, and the media just laughed at us. And we have all these articles of people making fun of us for saying something quite reasonable, which is student debt is unjust and should be eliminated. And now it's policy from, you know, one of the mainstream candidates for the presidency. So change is a strange process, but there's always pushback, and the film tries to not end on a simplistic note.
Beyond a simplistic note, I wonder about an optimistic note. You seem very positive about the future, although you're documenting the problems with the present.
Yeah, you know, in the book, the book ends with a coda. So each chapter in my book, it sort of makes explicit some of the thinking that behind the film. But each chapter of the book is a tension or a paradox that I think will just always be central to democracy. So, you know, The founding fathers said that there would always be rich people and poor people, and that tension was eternal. I don't agree with that at all. It's like there doesn't have to be a world where a handful of billionaires own all of the wealth. But I think there are other tensions that are arguably sort of eternal when we're talking about self-government. So I think we will always have to struggle to find the right mix between structure and spontaneity, or between how to balance the needs of people living now with people who haven't been born. Or how to balance the role of experts with sort of mass opinion. But there's a kind of bonus, there's a bonus paradox or tension at the end that's this optimism or pessimism, you know, and I think we have to hold them in tension. I mean, there's the famous quote from Gramsci that says he's a pessimist because of intellect and an optimist because of will. And my feeling is the opposite. It's sometimes when I see how much trouble there is in the world, my will sort of weakens and I feel very overwhelmed. You know, climate change is coming and there's, you know, a rising tide of xenophobia and racism. And, you know, we're seeing pushback against women's rights and all of these problems. But intellectually, when I look at history and I see what's happened in the past, that gives me hope, because people have really organized under much tougher conditions than I'm personally experiencing right now. And so I think the moral of the story, you know, the lesson of history is, you know, you have to keep organizing and trying to be strategic and trying to be smart and to keep going even when things seem bleak.